Welcome. This is the part where you're meant to go, hello. Welcome. There we go, everyone's there. Okay. So this session today is about sharing experiences of moving to the cloud. I want this to be an interactive session. We can bore you with presentations. You've probably had a few of those already. Hopefully some of them have been good. Or we can actually have an interactive session where you ask questions throughout the session. So my name's Rab Thine. I'm a technical specialist in Australia. I have many counterparts. You may have seen Toby Knight in some of the other sessions, Lee Hicken, Ben Walters. We're all out there in the field working with the customers to try and understand, one, why do you want to do this? Help you with that. And two, then making sure that you're aligned to the service so we don't go down a path that isn't the right thing for your business. On stage, I've got Mike Mahoney. Mike Mahoney is a solution architect from Microsoft Corp, so we've flown him all the way down from Redmond, so he may look a little tired. That's actually not because he's jet lagged, he's a bit hungover, but we don't talk about that. So I've known Mike now for probably about 5 years. It's quite scary counting up all the years. Interesting enough, when we started this journey, when I first flew to Australia from the UK, well, actually Aussie, but I had a bit of a journey there, the service we actually offered back then used to fit on one slide. If anyone's had anything to do with online services, you note that actually we've got hundreds of pages of documentation all the way from what it is, what it isn't, to security, etc. And we'll go through some of those things today. So next to Mike is Chris Howard. You've seen a little introduction about what he is. He's the Planning and Optimization Manager at SP AusNet, which is part of Singapore Power, and I'll let him talk to that a little bit more later. So he's been through this journey. He's actually one of our really, really good experiences, and I want to share why that was a really good experience today. Okay, and then we've got Paul down the end. He was a Senko employee. He's actually now moved off and started his own business. I actually think that's a really good story. That one of the things which we talk to around the technical architects working in online services is often a bit threatened by it, but actually he's actually changed his whole life by actually starting a business around it. So we'll go into a little bit about that later. Okay, so what do we got for you today? So we've kind of been a look through the introductions. I want to step you through what it is that we do in Microsoft in terms of a bit of theory, and then sort of jump to the practice of what we've seen from a Redmond point of view, so Microsoft Corp, and what we've seen in a couple of customers. We've got some good experiences and some bad experiences, and I want you to interact. I want to ask questions into this, because it's about you learning. If you're either looking at doing this or you are doing this, this is the place to ask the question. Guys, there's plenty of seats down the front. If you want to just come down. Please.
Right,
pretty
now,
please.
If you guys could all shift left, you can't come in from the side, so we'll have to have people come down the center.
The health and safety people get me if all the corridors are all blocked up. All right, so look, the first step to the journey of moving to the cloud is why would I do it? Okay, so I'm going to talk to a little bit about the theory of what we see in Microsoft in the industry, what do we see from our customers? And what does that mean to you as you start to look at, in essence, against your business? Then from there, what are the considerations of moving to the cloud? What is it? What isn't it? Which is probably more important. We want to make sure that you don't go down this path if it's not the right thing for your business. So I want to talk to you through what we see in as industry challenges, and then we put a Microsoft spin around that as we obviously look at our own online services. Then from there, what's the process you go to decide, yep, I'm going to do this? And this isn't an over-the-night process. This is something which can take weeks, sometimes months, and in some cases we've had 4 or 5 years, some of these deals. And we can talk to why that is the case and why it shouldn't be for you. And then the last piece, which is my specialty, which is a technical alignment. I'll take you through what I do in my day job and how I can work with you as end customers or potentially our partners we're working with you. So it's a process of making sure you totally understand the service, what are the issues with that, how do you mitigate some of those issues, and then how do you then get on and do your migrations and move to the cloud. All right. So we kind of cover that one off. All right, so I'm kind of going from a right to left because my brain seems to operate that way, so I don't know why I did it that way, but the first one which I see as a big reason to move to cloud and every customer is the conversation starts with cost savings. What makes up cost? How do I have staff? How do I have the operations? How do I plan for change? How do I do upgrades? How do I maintain the environment on a day in and day out basis? You know, we had this conversation when some of those ex came down, I think it was about 2 years ago, we had this concept of the $25 mailbox. And now we've gone sub 10 and we're almost getting down to $5. The reality is people want to get these cost savings, and how do you get that into your business? The next one I find, which is quite interesting, and I had a couple of customers which, when you start the conversations around technical alignment, the first thing you do is you get all the architects in the room saying, I'm going to lose my job. This is going to come down to cost. What's the biggest cost? It's the architects that sit in the room. I've never seen an architect or a consultant lose their job. In most cases, what the business is trying to do is move them off to things which have more return for the business. And we'll talk a little bit of that with Chris. He's had a good example of that one. What's the big challenge that we have in IT? Come on, hands up. Yell out some ideas. Change? Yep. Scalability? Any others?
Storage.
Yep. Yep. Uptime?
Risk.
DR? What do all these equate to? Cost. Speed of change. One of the big things that the cloud is now driving is the speed of change. How do I stay up to date with the current version, not N-1, N-2, and in some cases N-3? These are the customers which I deal with in day in, day out. How do I get to just being on the latest platform? It's amazing how many times I go into customers and they say to me, I get pushed by people coming in from home saying, I've got all this at home, why can't I have it in the office? Do people get that? Yeah? And that's the challenge that we deal with. So how do we solve the back end? We haven't solved the front end just yet. We can talk a little bit about that in other sessions. But the reality is, how do we get that pace of change and almost use that to drive your business? And I think the next thing is then when we look at pricing, how do you get that flexibility? Now, if anyone's ever been in a licensing discussion with Microsoft, you'll scratch your head and go, oh my God, there's so many different ways, there's things you can cut and paste. It's not easy. We've given you a lot of flexibility, but that creates complexity. So now when we're moving to the cloud, we're really starting to look at how do we simplify this but still give you the benefits of things like enterprise agreements or potentially just moving to subscription services. And Telstra's a classic example, month by month, pay yearly. So that's we're trying to give you that flexibility now to be able to keep pace with, obviously, the infrastructure. So I'm going to pause there. I'm going to move across to Chris first, I think. Just want to talk to what are the reasons why your business moved to the cloud? Why was this the right fit for you?
Is this working?
Is that working? Everyone hear it right?
Yep.
Okay, good.
That's better. I think for us it was a situation where our current environment was somewhat constraining us in the programs and the things that we were trying to achieve. Cost was obviously one of the motivating drivers, but for us we were also looking at flexibility, alignment with our future desktop environment, and specifically mobility. Our previous environment didn't allow us a tremendous amount of mobility for the people who are climbing the poles and who do need access to certain information about our electrical assets. So this was obviously aligned to where we were going, gave us some flexibility in delivering that mobility solution, and at the same time delivered a significant cost savings.
Okay, good. Paul, what are your thoughts? It's interesting, actually. Paul was in the business in Ascenco. That actually already moved to the cloud. I missed the opportunity to ask the question back then. It'd be good to hear his answer. But obviously they made a change from one cloud vendor to another. You know, why was that move there, and why did you move to the cloud in the first place?
Moving to the cloud was pretty much a cost-saving move, really, because Ascenco went through a growth pattern and acquired three group companies, which doubled the workforce. So to actually roll out that many systems, high availability, and going through, you know, rolling out to that many users was going to be quite a significant upfront cost. So the decision was made to go to a cloud. The decision was made to go to another cloud vendor, went through a pilot, didn't really work, didn't meet our needs, our requirements. So then we went over to BPOS and roll those out to users.
Okay. And Mike, you spend a lot of time hassling me in a good way. Your role is to make sure I do my job properly. But you get to see, I think, a good cross-spectrum of people across the world. What things do you see, good or bad, you know, why people are moving to the cloud and what benefits they get from that?
I think you spend more time hassling me than the other way around, but that's okay, Rab. We see the same thing across the world. You know, it's not just here, it's not US and Europe, but customers switching platforms, customers consolidating, acquisitions with different companies. They want to bring the companies together, put them on a standard platform that they can then realize capabilities that they wouldn't be able to. So they can send email to the entire company at once,
yep.
or can share like that. So that's the primary driver. That and cost savings. I mean, there's always cost. If somebody comes to you and say, we're looking at moving to the cloud, and it's not cost, right in the first three bullets, they're missing something. So.
Okay. So any questions from the crowd? Don't be shy. No? Oh, very quiet today.
What sort of cost savings did you realize?
Okay, sorry, question down the front.
What sort of cost savings are you guys aiming for?
So I'll just repeat the questions back so everyone can hear. What kind of cost savings did you realize across your business?
Initially, we realized $500,000 a year, and we are now beginning to recognize that we will realize some capital expenditure savings by not having to go and build new technology for other projects.
The acquisitions that Asenco made, they were on really legacy systems, so POP email, old Exchange versions. So they actually, and to consolidate those onto a common network and a common platform was going to cost a massive amount of money to have disaster recovery, high availability. I think it was close to like $500,000 just to get up and running. That wasn't including staff, support, engineering of it, architect involved. So just coming from an upfront cost of actually deploying, it just made sense to go to an OPEX cost.
Any other questions? So I heard a couple bounce around there.
Same question?
Okay. I did have Novartis, one of our biggest online customers. They're in the dedicated platform, but they went in looking for a 25%+ year-over-year cost savings in OPEX. And their CEO was quoted, he's quoted in the press in showing that that's exactly what they received. So
there was a question?
It was sort of a rush project. Like they really wanted to get a solution in, get it working, and get, because you acquire these three companies, sat stale for about 6 months. We really wanted to get a win on the board and get them collaborating. When we looked at the business requirements and did a proof of concept and get a pilot users on, it just didn't meet some of the requirements that the business had, especially as Asenco came from using Exchange, SharePoint in-house, OCS in-house, going to these other cloud vendors. Just some of the solutions didn't really quite work. Some of the business needs that they were using now wasn't available in the new version, and there were sort of beta options available. So it just wasn't right fit, you know. And I don't think the users that we had on there piloting wasn't really good feedback. So the decision was made to let's scrap that and let's look at the alternatives.
Okay. Any more questions? Going. One down the back. So just repeat the question. So what was the transition experience like going from in-house to cloud? Yep.
For us, we were already outsourced to a external supplier providing us a email service. So in terms of an experience for our end users, really it was just basically the impact of moving from a Notes client to an Exchange client. Behind the scenes, there were a number of things that we put in place to minimize disruption. So at an endpoint perspective, I guess it was quite minimal. From an IT perspective and dealing with our outsourced supplier, we had to work with them so that they could cease and desist, I guess, the Notes admin service and start taking up the ability to deliver us the support function for MS Office and connectivity to BPOS.
For us, is quite different because, in essence, it wasn't just one project. It was sort of four. So we had four companies with different mail systems, different domains, different forests, different infrastructure migrating to one common platform. So it's really, you really got to focus on your due diligence and your design and your actually planning, because if you can't get that right, we wouldn't have had a successful migration. So we spent about 3 to 4 months planning it out, doing information gathering, and this was worldwide. So this was systems in North America, South America, APAC. So we really got the planning down right, go down pat, and then we decided to go to a pilot, and then the migration was very quick. So we migrated the bulk of our users in a few months. So the migration is actually the easy part. The planning and preparation is the hardest.
Any more questions? We're going to go through technical due diligence later, so these are technical type conversations. So one over here.
Fair enough to say, you've got to do a lot of planning, but what did that mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So So I might park that question because we've got a session which looks at that a little bit later. Is that all right? Yep. So there's a question down the back.
There absolutely is. Our current desktop environment, which I'll talk to in a later bit, but our current desktop environment is a little bit antiquated. So we decided to take a staged rollout. And at this point in time, we've got Link being proof of concept based, I guess. But we are right at the beginning stages of deploying Windows 7 in Office 2010, which will include the Link client and a number of additional features. It's really our own environment that was our constraint in that space.
Okay. Any more? All right. Okay. I think it was the one down here?
Yeah.
It was to do with the business cycle, making that decision to move from current environment to the cloud. What's the expected time frames for those? Months, and weeks?
How long is a piece of string? So the question was, how long is the decision process for moving to the cloud? As I said, look, seriously, we... You know, I think your process for deciding seemed like about a week, but I'm sure it was a bit longer than that. I was joking with Mike about, you know, we've had deals on the table for 4 to 5 years. I think Novartis, and I kind of want to quote Brian, who was one of my counterparts, you know, that was a couple of years just going through boardroom discussions. So once again, it depends on how big your environment is, what's the reason for doing it, because then it's amazing how, and I'll say the one big success point that comes from every one of these that did deploy was there was either a CIO or higher making this happen. If it didn't have that, every one of those failed. So look, in general, you know, so if you think of the decision process we generally look at is somewhere between 2 weeks and I'd say probably 10 to 15 weeks, depending on what iterations they've got to go through and what industry they're in. And then obviously their migrations can be anywhere from, you know, sort of 4 weeks to a year, depending on how much coexistence you want.
I'm going to add a point to that. We do have a slide coming up that covers the decision, the major decision points, and you'll have to translate that into your own process in your own company of, you know, risk and analysis. How long does that process take for them to sign off on, you know, something like this? So
we'll just take one more, and then we'll push on. Always comes up.
We're a regulated industry, so we spent a considerable amount of time on the phone with Mike and his peers looking at the security aspects. We asked to go line by line through their security details. Once we had that, we put that through to our legal division, and we also put that through to our energy regulator to make sure that they were comfortable with the intent that we had. And considering that a lot of our core systems are still within our business and that this was email and some collaboration tools, that we basically got the green check.
Senko is mainly an engineering project services company, so it's nowhere near as highly regulated as what Chris is. But we had a risk team, a commercial risk team, looking into, you know, where data is stored. And the only issue we really had was that we had got a couple of offices in Canada, and they were on the assumption that the data would be in the States, and, you know, the whole Patriot Act came up into play. When they actually looked into the more detail of actually what that meant and what data was going to be in the cloud, it was only email and, like, say, collaboration tools. So we weren't rolling out documents and we weren't going to use SharePoint Online for a placement for our enterprise content management system anyway. So it was a small topic that came up, which was mitigated. So,
all right, so let's move on to the next point. Hold your questions, because I think a lot of these are going to be relevant the next pieces we go through. So we're now at the point where we think cloud's something we want to do. We've got exec sponsorship. Now what do we do next? So one of the things I start every one of my sessions with my customers is, what are the kind of gotchas? So we call them the considerations, because it's a nice soft marketing word. But the reality is they're things you really need to consider when you move to a cloud service. As you move into a multi-tenant, scalable environment, you don't have the ability to be able to touch those back-end servers. Okay? You have the ability to be able to configure, not customize. Classic example is you might have code on your servers at the moment. You won't be putting code on those base servers in the cloud. Sometimes that can be a challenge. Now, if I look at the Lotus Notes environment, which is probably the most common one, you know, you've got your apps and you've got your mail. Where do those apps go? How do I then go and make them work most likely in a SharePoint environment? There's customizations you're going to need. So that will cause some issues, potentially some blockers. But best to know them now rather than 6 months down the journey if you're going through a long decision cycle. Okay. Every cloud solution is going to have some kind of security policy. Now, if you're a security guy, you generally start with no, not yes. And the reality is that's the right attitude when you're looking at this service. And it's not just Microsoft, it's all the cloud services. How do we secure our data? Who owns the data? Does the data get mined? Where's the data at any point in time? It goes on and on and on. So go through the security policies. Ours are actually now public on the Trust Center. And then also then how do they then get referenced in certifications? Data location and transfers. I mentioned a little bit before, the data map. Where does your data sit at any one point in time? The cloud is nice and fluffy, but the reality is you want to know where your data is because that has laws associated with it. Okay? So one of the things that we've now learnt by probably mistake or learnings or whatever you want to call it is we're now at the point where we need to tell you exactly where your data is depending on which regional data centres you're in. Okay? So that's public information now. If you've ever come from an outsourced environment or a hosted environment or something along the lines where you're not under the control of those servers or someone's doing that on your behalf, you're probably used to auditing your data or auditing the way those systems are run. We do not allow, and most cloud vendors don't allow you to go and do audits. There's good reason for that, because if you're one customer here and you've got another customer next, but you wouldn't want someone auditing your data. The reality is we need to be able to get to a way of being able to scale auditing, and we use third-party auditors for that. I think it's twice yearly we do that now. Auditing?
No, it's an annual.
Annual now.
Yes. Yeah, so the SAS 70 or the SSA 16 certification is annual.
Annual now.
It's okay. A six-month audit process that we're under review, and then it's published in April. The ISO 27001 certification, it actually does coincide with the same process. Okay. So those are updated in the, well, April. I was going to say spring, but that's not.
Depends where you are in the world. Yep. All right, so liability. And there's two different ways you can look at liability. Obviously, we're a business. We've got to run. We've got to make sure that we don't go under. You know, obviously, Microsoft has to look at the way we operate and making sure that we don't get sued and go under. We've had several events in the past where we've been sued and several dollars have gone out the back door. At the end of the day, this service is cheap if you look at the way the industry is actually priced. And the risk associated with that service has to be related to the actual service cost itself. Now, we cap our service liability at 1 year. Okay, and that's proportional to the services, and you can go through the SLA document. The reality is it's not unlimited. That's the point. Now, what does that mean to your business? If you're putting highly strategic information on there and it causes downtime to your business, is the return from that service in terms of liability equal? Are you happy with that? This often causes challenges. So that's another thing you need to go and look at. Customers may remain current. This is a good one. So in our service, we look at the minimum to be able to get on and access the service is N minus 1. So a classic example, if you're looking at mail, in our current service, because obviously our back-end systems are 2010, is 2007 of being an Outlook client to connect to it. And we have similar boundaries for, you know, how you connect into SharePoint and connect into Link. Now, in 2013, 2014, when we have our next iteration, once again, that's going to shift to N minus 1, so we're probably going to save 2010. Can your business operate at that pace? So from a client point of view, it's a great thing that the back end's going fast. Can your front end do that? So do you have the ability to be able to manage your environment, and do you want to go at that pace? So once again, cloud service is about being on the latest and greatest. So that's another consideration. Are you comfortable with our roadmap? So obviously our roadmap is dictated by the servers that you know and love on site, and they're now all being written for the cloud. But when we change some feature sets in the ones on site, it's going to be the exact same feature sets in the cloud, give or take. So once again, are you happy with what's actually in our service and when it's going to be released? Okay, so now we're getting very, very good now at actually telling what is in our roadmap. We can tell you around 12 to 18 months now ahead, and are you comfortable with that? So once again, your business needs to make sure that it aligns to it. And the last one is obviously the deployment lifecycle, and very similar to what I was talking through there. Once again, how does it fit in with the actual feature sets which are coming out over time? Okay. Now, the one big gotcha there is we can remove features. Okay. And we're pretty open about what we're going to remove because the products which you know and love on site, you know, we generally tell you up front, you know, we're going to drop public folders. Well, we tried that a couple of times, but we'll get there. There are features which will be turned off in terms of protocols. Once again, if you've got applications which are talking to these, they'll break when we get to the next iteration. So once again, we try to be very public about what is our features that are coming out and making sure that you're aligned to those. All right, so Q&A on that one. Let's start with Mike on this one. Obviously, this is, I think, a good representation of learnings. We've done this now for many, many years, and we didn't do this in the past. What things would you come back and give us feedback on?
I would say in the beginning, more customers they're familiar with the hosted model, or outsourced, standard hosted, outsourced model, where you have a dedicated environment. It's not cloud. I think we're trying to brand it private cloud, or there's a private cloud out there. But it's really, it's your dedicated environment. You can configure it and do with it what you want. If you want 50 meg transport limits for your email, you can have it set that way. Well, this is not one of the configurable items in Office 365. We've got 25 meg attachments, and I can't change that. So that's an example of, in the beginning, that's what customers had trouble with accepting, moving to the cloud. As we're going on our second generation of Office 365, we have to have customers upgrade their clients. So 2003 Outlook, now we need 2007, so you have to be able to roll that out. We'll give you 12 to 15 months to roll that out, but at the end of that time, we want to shut down the servers in the background. So you have to be moved forward. We're going to move you forward. We're going to migrate you. You have to be there with us. So down 6, 7, and 8 are really critical if you're on the service moving forward.
Okay. So, Chris, obviously we had this conversation about a year ago, and this didn't exist then. But obviously now you look back on your experiences. What learnings would you have from obviously those points?
Just in looking through these, I think we were aligned even though we didn't know it. The environment that I am operating in at the moment is still a little bit out of date and out of support. However, we have initiated programs to move to Windows 7 and Office 2010 and do some back-end work in our server infrastructure. So, you know, without knowing it, we're actually addressing a number of these. The big ticket items for us were obviously making sure that we understood the security implications.
Yeah.
And additionally, the customers must remain current was a good one for us as well. We've developed an IT strategy that basically is stating less is more, consolidate, clean up, and commoditize. So by moving that path, we're actually working to drive a behavior to maintain a level of currency. So this actually helps us to promote that.
Okay. So Paul, question to you. We didn't have this conversation because you did the work. So you're an in-house consultant. How did you address a lot of these concerns, obviously, of Asenco?
We learned a lot going to the previous cloud provider and actually how to do it properly and what not to do. So when we took on possibly going to BPOS, so we did a due diligence. We went through pretty much a lot of these points on here and actually really planned out what we were going to do. So we had, like Chris, we had legacy desktops. So we had XP rolled out. We had Outlook 2003, Office 2003. We had separate networks, separate domains, everything. So to actually get our client side ready for the back end, we had to do a lot of work as well. So we had to do domain consolidations. We had to do network consolidations. We also had to upgrade our fleet out there. So that was probably a big one where we needed to stay current as well with the back ends. So, and with the roadmap going forward, we're now rolling out Office 2010 as well to all the clients ready for Office 365 to get the best end user experience. With the auditing and the cap liability wasn't too much of an issue for us. Really, the business really wanted to go to the cloud for cost saving, and they're highly configurable and not customizable. Wasn't a big issue. A lot of our apps and tool sets actually plug into the Outlook client, not the back end. Public folders is probably the biggest challenge for us, but we mitigated that. I can talk about that later if you like.
Cool. All right, so questions from the crowd? Oh, you're all going to shy on me again. Come on. One right over here.
How is customer support handled, say, email recovery?
Okay. So the question to me or to... Okay, so look, I'll talk through two... Well, actually, you can talk through the theory, and then you can talk through the practice. How's that?
Okay, the theory is... specifically for email, we have We have retention policies for email. You have 30-day retention for deleted items. You have 14 days after that where you can recover the deleted items. And after that, that mail is gone unless you have an archive. So there's no restoration of mail after that fact in the Office 365 environment. Now, we use Exchange 2010 with the device of database availability groups. We have multiple copies in multiple data centers. So traditional backups, tapes, and those restores, that's not how we can run our service today.
So just so I could show you, the question was, what was the experience of a support ticket?
Yep.
Okay. So I got through that. So look, so there's two pieces, and I'll let Chris talk on what he's experienced, and also Paul as well, because he's been through a number of challenges. So the process for support is we do what in essence is tier four. So once you've gone through your internal due diligence around a problem, you then come to Microsoft saying, you know, it's one of your problems, guys, go get it sorted. There's two paths for that. You can do it through the actual portal itself, or you can actually ring up a 1-800 number in any of the 40 countries which we operate that service. And then when you actually log that support ticket, it's done the standard priorities that you'd have on most services that come to you, you know, all the way from Sev A all the way down to a level four. So Sev A being 15-minute response time, and if you wish, we'll stay on the phone while we actually debug it, which probably means you'll drop it down a level so you don't have to deal with it. So then goes through the standard churn. So we obviously then, will first thing we'll do is work out, is it our problem? I think something like 80% of the problems that we get actually are still customer problems. So we need to confirm that. And then from there, then go through, actually, yes, we recognise there's a problem. Generally, if we see a problem, it's a problem for a lot of people. That's the way our model works. So generally, we know pretty quickly the trend analysis will tell us we've got some sort of outage. And then once again, it'll back and forth, either an email at your choice or through the portal, and then obviously then close that ticket down. Usual format, if we don't hear from you, then we'll close that ticket down again after trying to communicate with you. So that's a bit of the theory. Bit of the practice. What have you experienced? Be gentle.
No, it's not a bad news story. We've gone through our internal outsourcer, if you will, and basically they now provide level one and level two support up to connectivity and checking the client is working and things like that. They actually act as the bridge between ourselves and Microsoft, so I would not personally call Microsoft and ask for support. So there's actually an educated discussion happening about what the nature of the problem is, which in fact speeds up our resolution time quite a bit. So it's fairly seamless to us. We still call the same service desk. We still get the same type of output from that.
Yep. So I'd put it to Paul. We just had a conversation around Senko having some issues. Do you maybe want to talk through that one?
Yeah, Senko is, every organization is going to have issues, whether it's going to be client-side, server-side. Senko had a recent one with Max, with Outlook 2011 and auto-configure and auto-pop-ups. Now, going through that, like, there was seemed to be an issue on Windows clients. We, you know, sort of mitigated that. I was involved as a partner into Senko. We mitigated it down, and then there's still an issue with the Macs. But when we look for their service description, Mac Outlook 2011 is actually not supported on BPOS yet. So we've found a few workarounds for that. But when we logged the tickets with support, they are quite well. And even though it wasn't supported, they gave us so many workarounds to actually try and get around it. And they're actually now deploying a service pack on the back end purely to fix the issue. So quite proactive. I thought normally, you know, it's not the service description, sorry, with the wait, but they've been actually really proactive about it.
So that's interesting. So some of the due diligence around, they've deployed a solution which actually isn't supported. Maybe didn't know that until we got to that point. But obviously we've gone through the standard support ticket and tried to give them workarounds. So there's a question down here. Sorry, over here.
Yeah, we moved to BPOS about 6 months ago.
Yep.
Support's been fantastic with Microsoft. We're a partner. We've got a few of our clients on the BPOS over the last few months. Experience hasn't been that great because Australia being unique in the world, a lot of the smaller clients, we end up having to resell the service through Telstra. Mm-hmm. So all our support calls have to get logged through Telstra first. And our experience so far has been basically it gets escalated onto Microsoft before we finally get some help. Once it reaches Microsoft, it's fantastic.
Yep.
But getting to that point, it is slowly getting better, but there are still a lot of teething issues with Telstra.
So I'll partly answer the question. So the question is, our small and medium business is done through Telstra, so they're our partner for delivering that service, and anything which is direct with Microsoft, being the larger customers, is done obviously directly with Microsoft. The first level support, and Wayne, tell me if I'm correct, is done by Telstra. And obviously we're going through changes in support, and they have to go through those changes as well. I mean, a lot of it's inflicted by us.
I completely understand that. Yep. Is there a way of speeding up this process for the smaller
yep.
enterprises?
Yep. So I can't answer on the Telstra side, but I'm more than happy to help you connect with the Telstra, because that's their space, it's not my space. But the reality is the first level is done by them, and I think they'll take your feedback on working on how they get it ready. They're always supporting. I've worked with many of those support guys as well. At the end of the day, it's about getting it up to the level which is consistent.
As you moved to Office 365, the support help desk, the online documentation, the community, all that new infrastructure that's with Office 365 should help that situation a little too. Yeah, it's a big... Okay.
So connect with me after. I wouldn't mind getting the feedback. And obviously, we can only fix things if we know the problems. So. So look, you go on.
I totally understand. I come from the same with T-Suite customers as well. One thing I've found actually is that if I log the most amount of detail inside that call and stress to them, look, it's happened. Obviously, it's a multi-user thing or something. Definitely, needs to be migrated to escalate to Microsoft. I stress that, putting that you've multiple users tested multiple different operating systems, everything, and I've never had a problem where if I give them sufficient information, like, yep, we'll log into Microsoft right now, and it gets resolved either the same day or the next day. So I find the more information you can provide, the better.
Okay, that's good advice. Any other quick questions? One more down here.
Mm-hmm. But recently the security policy has changed on the live service to add complexity and strength. That means it's going to push right back into my corporate policy. So is that a reasonable expectation?
So you're seeing that the tightening of the security policy is going to make it more difficult for you?
Yeah.
As we change versions? Or is it just in general?
We'll remember 10 passwords.
That is a password change.
Yeah. Some thoughts on that, Mike?
Actually, I don't remember why the password change went into effect, the complexity and the length.
Yeah.
But I think it was in preparation to move to Office 365 and for migrations. The identity infrastructure under 365 was changed. So we've talked to a couple of customers where that was an impacting event. Customers have to change their passwords, and they had to do it within a relatively short amount of time. Yeah, actually, who are you with there?
So I don't have the answers, but obviously it's one of the considerations, and I think it's a good point to raise, is over time things may get more secure, and it might be for the reason that it has to be more secure based on the service that has to run. Right, so we're now at the point where we want to do this. We've now gone and looked at some of the challenges, which are your kind of 8 top challenges, and now at a point where how do we get on and actually decide this is the right thing to do? So over the last 5 years, we've gone through many iterations of working with many customers all around the world, trying to understand how do we get a bit slicker about the process of customer decision framework. So going to the question that was down here, how long does it take? Depends on how long it takes your business to get through each of these topics. I'll take you through these each one by one. So capability technical fit. So that's one of the things which is close to my heart, looking at, is this the solution which is going to solve your problems? How do you deal with the things which potentially it's not? Right? So some of the features aren't there. Some of the things are going to be slightly different. And then how do you get the mitigations to those problems? A lot of them can be worked around. So I'll take you through that process. We'll actually get a little bit more on that later. Legal and compliance. God, I love this. Nothing like talking to lawyers and then getting a lawyer on our side to talk to your lawyer and then just watch them interact. It's a bit like a divorce. They just go back and forth, and you don't seem to get anywhere. So putting some practicality around the legal conversations. Yes, the T's and C's say this, but what does that mean rather than saying no? This can be a hard process, but a process that you have to do. Read the contracts, read the SLAs, read the security documents, because that is how you're going to operate if you put your data in the cloud. security, privacy, and data sovereignty. A classic old age-old question. Geez, I wish if Microsoft had a data center in Australia, we would do this. I get that day in, day out. But the realities of, can I put my data in other countries, aka cloud, in many cases actually is possible. I spent a lot of time in government education, and the first line that you see in a lot of their contracts is data must be in country. You start diving down into why that is, in many cases people don't know. So we've got to go and challenge those if we're actually going to be able to adopt these types of services. Finance, another one. APRA obviously will govern the way their risk profile is. Once again, can I go and put data into another country? Actually, they look at it slightly differently. They turn around and say, well, actually, the customer needs to decide what their risk profile is, and we'll help them with that process. So each individual industry has their own governing bodies. Once again, we need to determine how this solution will fit against that. Business value, I said that at the start of the session, this generally doesn't work unless you've got someone in the business which is sponsoring it. And the reason for that is getting over those top two challenges or top three challenges. Sometimes you just got to say, you know what, move on. I think it was, I'll get Chris to talk to that one a little bit later, is sometimes problems actually aren't problems. How do we move on? And that comes actually from sponsorship. So governance, big key one. You're moving from an internal environment or potentially internal and outsourced or hosted, and you're now introducing another one into your environment. What's the process to govern that as one environment? I see a lot of challenges where we do a great job of planning, great job of migrating, and then everyone walks out the door, and then people sit there scratching heads trying to work out how to operate it. We never thought about it. So think about what is BAU, or business as usual, after we do this process. What's that governance layer, and how do we operate? Transactions. The amount of times I've spent going through months and months and months of technical due diligence, and we get to the end of that, and they think, oh, right, how much is this going to cost? That's no good. Then we just wasted 6 months' time. Have those conversations about what are the feature sets that you want. Sometimes you can't answer all those, but you can have a good stab at it. And then work out how you're going to price that. Sometimes there's complexities in licensing. Got to give Microsoft some time to work out what's the best model, or Telstra the best model on how you're actually going to buy this. Services support. Now, I mentioned a little bit before around governance, but what is the operational model once you get into BAU? So no longer am I looking at servers underneath my desk or in the rack out the back. I'm probably using a PowerShell command against servers that sit in the cloud. That really changes the way you do your workflow. So what does that look like? And I think the last piece, but not the least important, is when you're going to do not only the planning, the migration, and the BAU, who's going to do this? One of the biggest failures I see is when we expect guys who've got day jobs, which is all you out there, suddenly you're doing a night job trying to do this, and they burn out. I had one customer, which was a big one, which migrated about a year ago, a guy went on long-term sick leave, trying to deal with the challenge of, I've got 8 hours of work to do, and I was expected then go and do migrations at night. So think about, how do I go and get external skills to bring internally? What's the risk levels that you're approaching? And hence then, what's the appropriate people that you bring in? So it might be a SWAT team from Microsoft, it might be a partner, it might even just bring someone internally, depending on what type of migration and how fast you want to go. So they're the points which, that would be about a day session with Microsoft, and then obviously then we'd have a bunch of workshops after that one. So I might just go once again to the panel. I might start with Chris. How are your thoughts in regards to the processes we took you through, and what learnings do we have now we look back a year later?
I look back at this and I kind of think we flew through this. We went through a two-day workshop from the beginning of RCO giving us a challenge to the point where we were ready to present a case forward. And it was very intensive, and there was some passionate debate, I would say, during that, in going through each of these to see if there was a good fit. In doing so, we were able to target a number of these, and there was some good alignment, and there are some other areas where we felt that there was some work to be done. At the end of the day, however, at the end of that two-day workshop, our outsourcer, Microsoft, our partners, and our change management firm, as well as our business and my CIO, were quite comfortable with where we had gotten to, and we recognized that there were probably going to be some things that we were going to experience on the journey that were going to cause us a bit of grief, but our risk appetite to move forward and our desire to get moving, actually, we said, we'll find those, we'll get over them.
Okay. So, Paul?
We were quite a unique case. We had a newly director of IT start, and he had gone through all this process at his previous role. So he had already been through this, he had already done a deployment as well, and I've done previous deployments before Senko as well. So we already had the background, the knowledge, and what we had to be done. So when we actually stacked all these up, and we still did due diligence, we still went through all the legal side of things, security, how we're going to get it, how we create value in the staff and the newly acquisition companies we had. And in services and support wasn't too much of an issue. So we were very unique. I don't know if it will apply too much to you guys, how we went through it, but it is an important step. So every one of these, if you want a successful migration and a successful end to the project, these are really important steps, no matter what your size are.
So I actually might refer to Mike, because a lot of this has come from the work that Mike's done. He's been here since we started getting into this game. He can tell you some great stories of how they had conversations with Energizer being the first customer. So what learnings have you come along the way, and what's the good, bad, and ugly, so to speak?
The biggest learnings are the fact that these different decision points exist, and you can't skip any of them. Okay, deciding to outsource your email or SharePoint or link online, to put it in the cloud is one thing. To outsource it is another, but every single customer that I've come across has gone through each of these steps, each of these processes, and they have to run in parallel. If you get down the technical one and then you start legal and compliance and you go, oh, well, our risk and security guys have to sign on this too. Well, they're going to trump it. The risk and security guys can come in at the end of the day and say, nope, that's not going out there, end of day. All right, 6 months down the line and you're completely wasted all kinds of time and effort. So the biggest point and what we've learned is these are the key work streams that have to be considered. They have to have sign-off in your project and in your evaluation. You can't forget them, and they have to run in parallel. So that means you're running a project from the very beginning of your evaluation. You've got to have project management and structure in place to make sure that you cover these major tick points.
Okay. Questions from the crowd? One over here. We have. The question was, have we done, in essence, moving to cloud for education sector? Yeah. So education sector, for staff. So campus, that's what I think they call it. I'm not big on education. Anyway, so staff. There's a couple of things in education. There's one which is the education profile in terms of usage patterns is very different to corporate. Corporate are generally very heavy users. Education is generally very light. Education has a lot of people generally hitting it, whereas the corporate world has generally less. So in terms of back-end infrastructure, we've had to do a bit of modelling in terms of what it is that's going to supply that. Now, generally, the payment for education is lower, so the reality is we need to work out what's the best model for that. In terms of customers that we've got moving in Australia, there are a few. I won't repeat the names because I just don't know whether they're happy with that. But I'm more than happy to connect with you and connect to... There's a number of universities which are moving. No, actually, so the staff mail. The staff mail is actually... Yeah, so I think last count there was 20-something unis at the moment currently looking at Office 365. And obviously then there's the transition. Some of those are on live at EDU, which is the student mail. And how do I get that mixed together? So there's some different challenges there compared to corporate. So more than happy to connect directly if you want to get those connections. Okay. Any other questions? No? Oh, very quiet. So I might just...
Well, there's one.
Yep. Over here? Oh, you've had your question. Move on. Yep, okay. So the question was any features or functionality which you've lost by moving to the cloud, and I think probably could talk to two levels here. One's BPOS, and obviously the other one's the Office 365 as you move forward. So you want to talk to that?
I think for us being a node shop, we didn't lose any features necessarily. We did have some integration needs for the node's applications. We were able to support that using a partner product from Binary Tree. I think, if anything, we've gained a lot of capability that we didn't necessarily have before.
The biggest one for us, and probably for all Exchange users, was public folders. I don't know about everyone else, but it's pretty a bit of a burden being an Exchange administrator looking after gigs and terabytes of public folders, which when you actually do your reporting and due diligence on, you probably find that 90% of it hasn't been touched in 2 years, and that's what we found. So we had about 2 terabytes of public folders. We cut that down to about 30 gig. and migrated into a combination of shared mailboxes and SharePoint. So apart from that, we came from on-premise SharePoint, OCS and Exchange, so it wasn't too much of a feature set jump or change. Just from an end-use perspective, it didn't even look like they even went to anything else because they saw the same product set.
So I might just take you through, actually I won't take you through it, but I'll talk to what Microsoft does. So we've taken those streams of work, tried to model ourselves from a sales process onto your customer decision process, match those two together. At the end of the day, there's very little sale in this. It's more along the lines of, by the time I even have that conversation, is we're already going down this path. We need to decide whether this is a go or a no-go. And I think that's the key point, which if you go through each of those streams of work and you go and look at what is the output of those streams of work, how does that feed back into the business case? Now, if I think about challenges, especially in the finance sector, which I do a lot of work, is there's been a lack of, I think, structured business cases on how we move this forward, so it fails. We have this iteration of, I've got to go to a board and say we're going to move forward. So think about what those outputs are. Now, if you work directly with Microsoft, this is the framework we'll take you through, and you can adopt that to the how you operate. Once again, partners will probably have something quite similar. Okay. So we're now at the point we want to do it. We've gone and looked at the considerations and probably some mitigations to it. We're now working out the business case study and how we're going to push that forward. And now we then get into what's next, which is technical alignment. And the interesting thing is we've kind of gone through four steps, and this is where most people start. I think this is the wrong place to start. The technical bit actually is easy in comparison to all those other things. I'd love to say it's easy. It's easier. So look, this is heart and soul to my role. So I'm a technical specialist around Office 365, and this is the journey that I'll take through. So once we've gone through the customer decision framework, we've worked out the structure, we've got some kind of evaluation plan in terms of timings and who's going to do what, and we know what the business case is going to be and who it's going to go to, what's the success metrics, we then go and say, right, we're good to go and now work out whether this is a technical fit. So the first stage of the technical alignment is to make sure that what you have thrown at us in terms of the business wants to do it actually is correct. Is there a sponsor? What it is that you're trying to achieve in your business versus technically? Because we've got to solve the business challenges with a technical solution. So that's the first iteration I'll take you through. That's generally probably an hour or two presentation. We just test the water a little bit. Then we then go to the next stage, which is the technical briefing. What is the product? The last thing I want you to do is walk away and not realise what it can't do. So I'll take you through the service descriptions. So it's PowerPoint by death, unfortunately, but the reality is we take you through step by step just exactly what this service is, and more importantly, what it's not. And out the back of the what it's not, or potentially some of the what it is, become challenges. Some of them start off as blockers. A lot of them generally are just technical hurdles. Now, money can solve most things. So there comes that whole ROI question. Do I want to spend that much money? So we've got to work that out. We've got to create a shopping list of things to go and fix. Then we'll take you through the solution alignment workshop. Oops, hang on. I thought that might tab through. Cut and paste wasn't too good. The solution alignment workshop will then go and take what are the things which we've seen as the issues and the blockers, and work through them a bit more and try and work out what would the mitigations be if we were going to move forward on that. Okay, we create a nice report which tells you these are your green lights, these are your yellow lights, and these are your red lights. You need to go away and think about how we're going to solve them internally, and we'll give you the theory. We need to come back and work out the practice. And that is the next step. So we've got this report. It's great. It's beautiful. It tells everyone that we've got some challenges to be able to go and do this. It's really great for you because you can take it to your management and say, hey, I've done all this work, and it only took me 2 hours to create it for you. So the next stage is then how we then go and work through those mitigations. So that's probably getting some external consultancy. It might be Microsoft. It might be some of your internal guys sitting in a room, whiteboarding, trying to work through. Okay, that's nice to have some theory. We've got to work out the practice. And every customer is different there. It goes off-piste very quickly. But we come out the back of that with, right, know what the challenges are, know how we're going to fix them. We're now at the point we need to get to the next step. So what's the next step? We're going to go migrate. So we've got all these challenges, and now we're going to migrate. That's great. So I need to go and talk to the guys which are going to go and do that migration. So that could be Microsoft, could be a partner once again, and work through how they're going to do implementing those mitigations, because that's going to come out to the cost again, and also then how they're going to clean up the environment. Moving to the cloud, the last thing you want to do is take your legacy of challenges and just plop them in the cloud, because tell you what, those problems on-site are going to be worse in the cloud. So we need to clean that up. Off the back of that will be, okay, we can now do this. And what's missing from there is what's BAU? What is that operations? So we need to think about what structure is going to change. And we can't do that for you. You need to work out what your model is. And once again, there might be partner services in that. So we get to the point then, we know how we're going to do it. But what we also have is a shopping list. Here is a bunch of features which are going to solve those business problems. And I need to go and talk to the sales dude out the back. He's then going to say, this is how much it's going to cost. Okay. Once again, that's the last piece that then goes into the business plan alongside what's the migration cost, which then goes and works the numbers. You might also want to kick the tires along the way. Is there a trial? Now, in Australia, we have two different ways of doing trials. If you're a smaller business, you'll go to Telstra and use T-Suite and obviously fire up a trial. It might be 30, 60, 90 days, whatever that might be, and work through what we say is theory, actually use practice. Or if you're an enterprise agreement customer working directly with Microsoft, you come to us and we'll provide your key and create the same tenant. Same back-end infrastructure, it's just which one are you buying it from. Once all that's done, you then go through your internal cycles and then hopefully come back and say, yes, it's a green light, we've got some cash, let's go and get on with it. And obviously then we go and do the migration. So they're the steps we take you through in terms of timings in this. I said the first session was about 2 hours. This technical briefing could be anywhere from 2 hours to a day, depending on how many services you want to go through and how much depth you want to get into. The system alignment workshop now is a great little tool that we're using. I can generally get that done in about 2 hours, create that report for you. Technical reviews, how long is a piece of string? Depends what challenges you throw at me. And then obviously then going into the planning and deployment. So we have our own migration team, a premier deployment team, which is basically an ex-SWAT team that came from Corp, went globally. All they do is migrations. They don't do any of the cleanup. They don't talk about operations. They just do migrations. And the reason they do that is because that's where we've seen the biggest amount of pain in the past. Now, they're now part of our services division, and a lot of that skills and knowledge has now come out to the partner base, and they're using some of those same practices. So that's the technical journey. Might start with Mike, because he's the guy who makes sure that I do my job properly. So what things in this process would you see as worth really highlighting, and what do you do to make sure that this is actually a good job?
That middle segment, due diligence, a technical review, is a big component of my job. We call it quality assurance. The last thing I want to do is have you sign a contract, get ready to deploy, and in the middle of that deployment run into a technical issue that we should have known about that's causing you pain and you won't be able to continue your migration. Okay, because those are the technical requirements that can make or break your business case. You know, if you can't send 100 megabyte files, or if you can't spam the world from your online environment, and that is your business case, then everything has to come down. We have to tear it all apart, and then a lot of time and effort has been ruined. So we have a technical due diligence process that we've built that reviews the work Rab and his guys have done. We go through our major checklist items and make sure that the customer, you the customer, and our sales team have discussed all of the key technical issues. Have you signed off on maximum message size? Have you signed off on the fact that you need Outlook 2003, or you can't use 2003 going forward? Internet Explorer, huge issue in Northern Asia, right? IE6 is out of support. It doesn't work on Office 2000, wherever we are. Okay. It doesn't work with Office 365. These are the major tick items that we have to cover and make sure that before we go to contract, they're clear. Okay. So we have that process in place.
Thanks, Mark. So Chris, you changed our rules a little bit. You compressed all this into 2 days and gave us the ultimatum. I need an answer next week. Do you want to take us through that journey?
I was going to say, you start off by saying this is probably the last thing you do, and I was thinking this is the first thing we did. We were given a fairly hard timeline as a mandate, and it was actually set out as a challenge by our CIO to our Microsoft representatives. I want it done in 90 days. And when he said that, I went very pale because our Microsoft rep said, yep, we'll come back to you with that. And I'm sitting there going, no. What we did agree to was 90 days from the date we started the pilot, we would finish the deployment. So we actually spent these 2 days actually going through and gathering a number of details and workshopping through it. And again, that's where I suggested we had a few passionate discussions about what would and wouldn't work. And for the most part, we were fairly well aligned once again. We did, because of the compressed timeframes, we did accept a higher level of risk that we might run into some things that weren't going to work. And in fact, we actually found one because we were Office 2003, but we were able to work with Microsoft to overcome that after a small period of time.
So, Paul, this was your job. I didn't have the opportunity of taking you through it. You did it for us. So, you know, what were your thoughts as you went through it?
We learned a lot just through Perio's Cloud Render going through and not doing any of this at all, really, pretty much. Just get it in, get it working, and roll out. So, when we came back to square one and go right, you know, let's do this properly. So, due diligence was a massive focus. So, we tore it down for about 3 months, looked at, did a massive information gathering on all our systems, how we used it, what do we do with them, how it's going to look after we roll out, and how that's going to work. And that gave us a better leap into, okay, we know this is going to be a success, and we'll roll this out. So we had to talk about 3 months for design and delivery of it, and then when we did the migration, that was a very quick time frame. So actually, I think it took less than what we used to design with. And coming off the deployment and management, we really took a time out just to train the help desk guys as well to make them understand how the product worked and how it's used and what they do now. So, you know, those guys don't go into the back end of Exchange or System Manager or you know, AD to manage it. They will use some of the tools that we have now. So that was probably the biggest moment for us, was actually the design and implementation.
Cool. And I'll just add to that. I think for us it was planning as well. I mean, we did have the 90-day from pilot to delivery, but we spent probably about 3.5 months in planning, organizing, setting up the business change aspects of the program. We spent far more time actually planning and getting ready than we did from migration to end of migration.
Cool. All right, so we've now gone through a journey of we do want to do it. We've then looked at what are the challenges. We then looked at what are the overall scope of work on how we're going to say yes or no on this one. Now we've done the two technical due diligence. We're now at a point where we can actually then get into migration. So I'm going to stress it again. Last point is then think about how your business is going to operate after that. So look, I'm going to jump into Q&A after, but I just wanted to point out some things which have, I think, a summary of learnings that I've seen in my, probably 4 and a bit years of looking in this and the last 2 years doing it directly. Service descriptions, what it is, they're all publicly available. I've put links into every one of these so you can just click on them, it'll take you to what Office 365 is, and also in those service descriptions it tells you about what it isn't. So that's what I'll take you through, but that's all quite well documented. The deployment guide. These things just weren't around back in the early days. We've now got a 137-page guide on how you do this right down to the deep technical level. You can actually deploy this yourself if you follow that guide. The reality is you probably want to get some experts to assist you when you make some mistakes. But it's a really, really good guide. And even if I could do it, I created my lab environment off the back of it, so it can't be too bad. The Office 365 deployment readiness tool. So what things are going to break in your environment by rolling this out? Now, these are going to be the gotchas. So we've got a tool that you can go and run internally. It goes and looks at things like IE, what's your desktop doing, what's your Exchange environment doing, what's SharePoint doing, comes back and creates a report for you. These are the things you're going to have challenges with, you're going to have to go and address. Now, that's what our consultants would come and do. At a smaller level, that tool will give you some really good guidance. The Trust Center. So one of the things we've been beaten up with in the past, and I'm happy to say it because I've been one of the guys who've been beaten up, and then I go beat him up, is, you know, what is our security model? Now, we haven't been openly public about it. It's all been kind of NDA, and you've got to ask us some questions. The Trust Center is changing all that. Where's your data sit? How do we operate it? How are we certified? All those big security questions, even down to an RFI QA, is actually up on that Trust Center. So once again, that's the link for it. And then I just pointed out that one. Obviously, all the type of RFI questions that we've got, we've created a white paper on. So rather than having to start this process again, go and have a look at that document. Probably 70 to 80% of the questions you're going to ask are kind of probably answered in there. So then come back to us with the 20%, the really hard ones. It'll be a much quicker process. Now, last but not least, how-to videos. One of the things that I've heard complaints about is, how do I run this? What are all the features in the actual admin center? And how do I work in hybrid mode? I've put a link into where all those how-to videos are. Okay. So that's the journey. That's what we'll take you through. I hope that's been helpful. And I think we've got probably about 5 minutes, actually 7 minutes, for a bit more Q&A. Any more questions? One over here.
Obviously, Dan Crack, Microsoft wants us to drop drive letters and share drives, home folders and things like that in your share So if you're running an on-premise SharePoint server, performance is not an issue. That's great. But if you move to Office 365, you push your users either now or down the track to use SharePoint, there's a whole sort of file to pull through. How does that, what's the experience like, I guess, for the users, considering that it's not an on-premise SharePoint server, so therefore there is going to be latency?
Yep.
So you know, it's hosted in Singapore. How does that work?
Because you're using SharePoint, right?
Yeah. For the things that we've put into the cloud SharePoint, they're not heavy integrated type applications. So the performance and latency in that regard aren't too much of an issue. We do have a local SharePoint in-house that we're playing with 2010 for actual hardcore integration. Some of the things that you can configure and customize. So we're actually going to be doing a hybrid type state for that type of an environment. But for those things that we have put up there, hasn't been an issue at all. And that includes some high-res video imagery. And you heard Ash Peck, who's my CIO, we've actually put a couple of safety videos into the cloud SharePoint, and they seem to come through just fine, even through a 3G network.
Sorry. We've got an in-house SharePoint. We've got SharePoint 2010 as well as the cloud SharePoint. I totally understand where, you know, where the roadmap's going, you know, bye-bye file shares and, you know, let's put them in doc libraries and all that. I mean, there is sync tools out there, like you got the workspace so you can sync offline files through a whole SharePoint site, that sort of thing. We use that for our South American guys. The finance team runs purely on the SharePoint online, so they'll have all their documents in there, and also they've got some on-premise as well. We haven't been migrated yet, so they'll use SharePoint workspace to overcome latency issues. So that's a possibility. There are other tool sets around there. Just got to look in your business and look where your files are. Like the majority of Asenco's business is CAD files, right? So there's no way in the world they'll be going into SharePoint. So just got to look at your business strategy and see where you can put your files.
So I might talk to a couple of things as we move forward. So it's about where you store your data and also how you access it and what are you accessing it for. So the age-old problem of I create a document, it's a presentation, it's a 20 meg file, I send it across to you, you make two little changes to it, you send it back, I've then got, you know, 20 meg file that's stored locally as a cache file here, 20 meg file that's stored on yours, I've got a 20 meg file that's sitting in a transaction log on an exchange server, I've had 20 meg go across and back and down again. Now, is that the best way to do it? It's how we probably do it, but the reality is there's better ways moving forward. So if you look at the productivity, you know, tools there, you're probably thinking, well, actually if I didn't look at the past and look at the future, could I actually go and edit that online? You know, go and make those one or two changes. So the concept of using web apps. Also, if I am bringing down a file, do I keep a cached copy or do I keep the original copy? So Office Workspaces. So there's a number of other tools which are coming over time which, yes, it might take me time to actually send that file back and forth, but if I do that efficiently, it'll be quick, and also I'll keep a copy of that locally. Does make sense? Another question?
Can I maybe just sort of adding to that, we've got in our SharePoint.
Yep.
We use Rubber there to optimize that, and it works absolutely fantastic into sort of low latency areas in Indonesia. Is there any plans for something like this? I know Riverbed's got the white water sort of cloud-based system. Is there any sort of plan from Microsoft side to sort of collaborate with those leads?
In the multi-tenant environment, no. There's not a plan to do that right now. Rab and I have both discussed and worked with Riverbed quite closely. But managing that configuration, co-load devices, certificate transfer so that you make sure everything's secure. In this multi-tenant space that we're in today, where your data could be resided primarily accessed through one data center or the other, and it could change every day, there are a lot of complexities that need to be figured out there. So
I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, though, but I've got Riverbed in Australia actually done the testing. Now, for Exchange, the reason why it won't work is we double encrypt, so we obviously do MAPI encryption as well as SSL. And if you can't get into that MAPI, you can't compress. And compression's about leaving the local attachment, and then obviously it seems fast because it's coming from local. In SharePoint, it actually works really, really well. Now, we don't support it, and I think in the future we may look at it, but at this stage it's still just looking at it. It's not on our roadmap. But I've actually got people on Office 365 who are using Riverbed and actually works smokingly. Now, also bear in mind, what are you compressing? Are you compressing that across your intranet, or are you compressing it across the internet? So bear in mind your cloud service now. once it gets out in the public domain, there's very little you can do unless you go and put a, you know, one of the riverbeds up in Singapore and Hong Kong. And that's, there lies some of the complexity that, that Mike was talking to.
Yeah, exactly.
I think over time that, you know, we're going to find solutions to that one. I think we'll probably create our own solutions to it because it's our problem. Any other questions? One over here.
For us specifically, it was around the operational cost for maintaining a nodes environment. We had a large number of mail servers, a large amount of capacity of storage, and the human resource overhead to manage that environment. So by moving to the cloud, we were able to reduce that down significantly, and a number of the people who manage that nodes environment moved on to higher value things. So there was some movement of resource capability and training so that they also had some mobility, I guess, in their careers. But certainly for us, it was licensing hardware, maintenance, storage, and some HR people type costs.
Thanks for the question. So we've got time for one more question, and then we're going to have to close down because we'll get kicked out. Hang on, I've got to see if anyone else first because you already asked a question. No? Over here.
What's the an opportunity that you seized a CIO to kind of gently push users in a direction that you want them to go, like maybe, you know, reducing attachments or eliminating attachments on exchange? You know, that's just an example. But, you know, how would I say we always have roles that would do this or that?
Yep.
Did you kind of gently push your users in some way?
We're a utility, which is formerly a government. So we're formerly SEC in Victoria. And change is something that happens at a very, very slow pace. So, yes, we did a fair bit of pushing. But interestingly enough, when I was asked to run the program, first thing I did was I grabbed 30 people from the business and made them change champions to help sell and promote. So in doing that, I had much better buy-in. Notwithstanding that, we still had to answer the question, why are we moving away from notes? Notes is the best thing in the world, blah, 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 blah. And we had to promote, why are we moving to Outlook? What's it mean? And things like that. And at the end of the day, the benefits of us being able to provide that mobility solution and to be a lower cost for our business really won them over.
Are you more so talking about fight back from other users to go into the cloud solution, or more so like changing their process and how they do their day-to-day? Okay. we already had a pretty good process in-house and we're actually, you know, emailing links around rather than emailing a document around, you know. We also pretty much scaled back public folders and changed the help desk. So we actually used the help desk to say, no, we can't do that anymore. We have to do it this way. So eventually over time, users got trained by force, really, to actually do it that certain way. It's all come down to governments. So you get people to write the policies and procedures in place, and then you just enforce them for the help desk, and then eventually users will actually succumb to those.
So look, I'm going to stop it there because obviously I'm going to get kicked out otherwise. So like a usual story, fill out your evaluations. But the evaluations are very important for this because this session is driven by what you say. If you like it, tell us. If you don't, tell us. Give us the constructive feedback. We changed the session greatly from last year where the customer just presented based on the feedback I had this year. So if you don't like that, let us know. But let us know what you do want. So thank you. And if there's any more questions, feel free to come down.